Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Washington, D.C., it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio. QLPOR, as it's widely known, features a bevy of poets, spoken word artists, and live poetry readings with best-selling authors. Your host is Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the program. We will soon be known as Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio, and YouTube. My special guest is Elaine Charles. She is a multi-genre author living in the Pacific Northwest, adeptly balancing her daytime role as an elementary school teacher with her nighttime pursuits as an award-winning poet and fiction writer. Her notable works include, on the fiction side, the young adult fantasy, Scene Keepers, which debuted in, I'm so glad you're here, in May 2021. I'm trying to stay professional, but I'm just so glad you're here. And it was published by Wild Rose Press. And on the poetry side, her recently published poetry collection, Three Hearts Stitched, published by Great Lake Books. Tonight marks Elaine's second appearance on this podcast, and I am absolutely ecstatic that she's with us. Let's extend a warm welcome to Elaine Charles. Hello.
Thank you. Hello, hello. I'm so happy to be here.
The first time was in 2020.
I know. Time flies.
Whether you're having fun or not.
I had one poetry book out then, and the fiction books were just in process. So now I've grown a lot, I think.
Let's begin this poetic journey.
Okay.
What I'd like to know first, before we begin, your newest work, what inspired you to write the book?
I think this book's been in my heart for a long time. I just was afraid to put something so personal out, and so it was safer to write poems about nature and about the world that inspired me, or fiction and fantasy, because it was made up. And that was safe, and it was exciting and fun. And writing this book has been a long journey. I actually started it under a different title years ago. And I think when I was on your show last time, it was already maybe partially done. I just didn't know what I was going to do with it. And it was a way for me to leave a piece of my heart behind to my family. I thought once I got brave enough, I could put myself out there, and that's what I did. So,
Three Stitched Heart. Tell me about that title.
Three Hearts Stitched.
Oh, it's been a long life.
Honestly, this book started out as, it was called Gravitational Pull, and it was half the size of this. It was much smaller. And to me, it was called Gravitational Pull because I was born on the coast, on the East Coast, and I always imagined the beach and always imagined the waves and always imagined the shore. And so I had this kind of feeling that all my poems gravitated towards that theme. But then when I found my publisher, Tess Jones from Egret Lake Books, I met her about a year ago at a conference, and we just happened to be next to each other at this function and got to talking. And I actually wanted to pitch a different idea for a poetry book. And I don't know how it came up that I had this small chapbook I had written about my adoption and things like that. And she wanted to see it, and she fell in love with this book. So we still wanted to do the other one, but she wanted to do this one first. But she wanted me to make it much bigger. She wanted me to double it, and she wanted me to go deeper and maybe share my stories, but also other stories, other voices. And so this kind of became about the birth mother voices. It became about all forms of adoption, so birth mother voices, adopting family, and child. And my stories and my experience being adopted is in this poetry book, but also other versions of stories that were shared to me from other people. And so we just, it was, since it was the three voices, and I had a couple of poems that talk about hearts being stitched, the title actually changed from Gravitational Pull to Three Hearts Stitched from my publisher, Tess. She suggested it, and I loved it. So she gets the credit for that. And she pulled it from my poems.
My poems. So the cover itself, talk about the cover. Walk us through the process for creating the cover.
Wow. Again, a lot of that was Tess. She created the drawing. She did. The cover is beautiful. I think there's a picture on your site, but it's got three stripes, three shades of blue for the three voices, and it has, and there's really pretty shades of blue. And then there's a simple silhouette black line drawing of flowers. And the flowers are very simple. I thought they were poppies at first, but they're called cosmos. And she drew them. She hand drew these cosmos. And we put the title with it, Three Heart Stitched Poems About Adoption. And it just flew. It was beautiful. We actually had another cover at one point that had some hearts, and it was a beautiful coral color. But she put it to a research group, and the group thought that was more like a romance book, and they really saw poetry when they saw this book. And she really wanted something to stand out if people were going to search for poetry books, and this came up for them to see. It's just, it's a soft, it's lovely, it's a really thick book. It's a pretty big book. There's 160 pages or something. And it's just real pretty.
It is pretty. The book, the overarching themes, primarily adoptions. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Flesh that out for us. What are some of the nuances in that you write about?
Okay. Yeah. It originally, like I said, started with my adoption process. I'm adopted, and I had a wonderful adoption story. I have wonderful parents, and I've always known I was adopted. I was always told I was chosen, and it was special. I have a sister who's not adopted. My parents tried to have children and could not, and so they adopted me. And then, lo and behold, which often happens, after they adopted me, my mom got pregnant. So I have a sister who is my parents' real daughter, and I blood related, whatever, however you want to say that.
Biological. All right.
It's funny. I grew up never feeling different from them. So they were very good at just, in fact, I grew up people telling me I look like my dad. So it's just I very much just had a nice adoption story. But part of that is my process. So even being adopted in a happy home with loving parents, a loving sister, a loving family, you still have those moments in school for heritage projects, or when during puberty, when you're developing and changing and thinking, what's wrong with my body? Or why don't I look like that? Or I have no one to go to for that? Or as I got older and I had my own children, I hardly thought about my birth mother at different times in my life, until I had all three of my own children. And when I literally was in the hospital birthing my children and having so much emotion and so many feelings as to, oh my gosh, how does someone give their baby away? But then you realize it's such a gift, right? So I also have my sister who she has adopted seven children. And
seven.
So,
yes.
And so so we have all these aspects in my life, right? So I'm adopted, she's adopting, I've had my children wondering about my birth parents. And it came down to the fact that you can be adopted and happy and in a loving home and still have those questions, still wonder, and it's nothing about how much love you've been given. You just still have those questions because it's only natural to have those questions. And then the more I talk to other people and I reached out to others to hear other stories, I found, you know, my story was just a speck, right? Just a speck in the amount of stories that could be there. There's so many voices of adoption. There's so many voices of negative and horrible situations, horrible stories in our history of women being shamed for having, for being pregnant out of wedlock, having children ripped from them. There's just so many heavy things happening. There's women who are addicted to drugs and they don't get to keep their babies. And probably deep in their hearts, they might want to, but they can't because addiction is just gripping with claws, right? So there's just, there's all these versions, there's all these stories. And so I took mine and I just went deeper and wider. And I just wanted to cover as many perspectives as I could and honor them, knowing that I wouldn't possibly scratch the surface of all the different stories out there. Yes, it's about adoption, but it's a lot of different versions of adoption. And my book is separated into three categories. So there are lots of versions of stories in the birth mom, different versions of how a birth mom might feel. I used a lot of liberty to take stories that were told to me and change them and to make them fiction, like fictionalized stories. I also made up stories to answer questions that I always had growing up adopted and wondering. And then I also have my own personal stories in there. And then there's each category. So it's almost like there's three chapters in the poetry book, and each chapter has many poems. So birth mother, adopting family, child.
Well, you've already answered some of my questions already.
Okay, there you go. I like to be
so
thorough.
That'll give us more time to listen to your poetry select.
Okay.
Please share some of your work.
Okay, so I chose a few. I'm going to read just a few poems right now, and I'm going to try to pick one from each of my sections. So this is a poem from the birth mother section. It's called Your Wings. I will set sail to you and free your wings. I will put you adrift until the stars align one day in another world at another time. This won't be our last encounter, not with faith like fire. Our bond is resilient and destined for tomorrow's. I am not sad today as you're lifted from my arms. Those weren't tears you felt on your cheeks. They did not run like rivers to the corners of your eyes, sunken mirrors to mine. Reflections of hope for your constellation, a sign for me. Though we won't meet again for some time, I'll stand my gaze on the sky at water's edge to catch glimpse of you, your wings ascending to mine. And that's, that poem is on page 13, if anyone's following along in their book. And then I have another poem called Dear New Baby. It's on page 69, and it's in the section of the adopted family. Dear New Baby, I've waited for your arrival. Weeks and months and years of procedures and losses, of dandelion wishes and rabbit foot hopes, buried under multiple mounds of sorrow. But now you are home. My heart, once crushed to ash and fault, transforms, renews in swirls of astound. Angels sing, a new dawn breaks. My empty womb is full. And on page 77, I have another one from the adoption or adopting family category. And this one is called Always Navigating. This one was inspired by a family that I talked to right before the book was going to publish. So it made it in at the last moment. Always Navigating. This family and that family, songs from birth and stories about adoption. What's real? What's imagined or made up? How much to divulge? What to hold back until the time is right? When will that time be? Will the truth cause trauma or indifference or lifelong pain? how to navigate the questions, shambolic, and so I squash them into a ball, wind my throwing arm, and hurl every unknown, or God forbid, the knowns we wish we did not know, into an abyss, awaiting sound and reassuring songs and stories to remain about this family and that family, about adoption and what's real, always navigating what's real. And the last one I'll read for this set is on page 103, or for this little moment before questions. I love this one. This is one of the first ones I wrote when I was first writing my poems, and it's called For the Angels, and it's how I imagined myself as a baby in that little room after I was born. For the angels were there that morning in the quiet solitude of your decision, the bittersweet choice I should thank you for, because I have words to speak and tears to shed. In the slowness of that summer heat, you must have suffered. You must have felt bitter or lost or sad. At least part of me hopes it's true. I felt it, that delicate kiss imprinting my soul. Maybe it was you. I like to think it's true sometimes, stretching tails to fall asleep. But I know you closed your eyes that day, as did I, with cries unheard and hunger neglected, my comfort a hospital crib to hold such tiny bones. Please don't cry for me. Enough sorrow spread in the light through my window, the one facing the sea. Yet still, there was good. I felt the downy plumes left on my pillow. I felt their warmth across my cheek. I still wonder sometimes it was you who left them there, and I should thank you, but for the angels instead. So that's the end of that little set there.
You know how I am. I like to flip the script just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like you to share that particular piece again, if you don't mind.
Oh,
and I'd
sure,
like us
I'd
to
love.
Focus on it just before we okay. move on to another set, all right?
Okay, yeah. So thank For you. The Angels, I would love to. For the Angels. Angels were there that morning in the quiet solitude of your decision, the bittersweet choice I should thank you for, because I have words to speak and tears to shed. In the slowness of that summer heat, you must have suffered. You must have felt bitter or lost or sad. At least part of me hopes it's true. I felt it, that delicate kiss imprinting my soul. Maybe it was you. I like to think it's true sometimes, stretching tails to fall asleep. But I know you closed your eyes that day, as did I, with cries unheard and hunger neglected, my comfort a hospital crib to hold such tiny bones. Please don't cry for me. Enough sorrow spread in the light through my window, the one facing the sea. Yet still, there was good. I felt the downy plumes left on my pillow. I felt their warmth across my cheek. I still wonder sometimes it was you who left them there, and I should thank you, but for the angels instead.
Tell me about a line in that particular poem.
Okay.
Really stands out to you.
Okay. In this one that stands out to me?
Yes. One line.
I think for me, it's definitely, where is it at? I love this part. I felt the downy plumes left on my pillow. I felt their warmth across my cheek. And I still wonder sometimes it was you who left them there. And I should thank you, but for the angels instead. This is the part I wrote first, and then the poem developed after that. But I just feel like when I think, I had a lot of dreams at one point when I was younger, I would dream, and I always had dreams of a sunny day at the hospital. Back in that year when I was born, I don't dare say.
Okay. I want to ask. Wait, the tip of my tongue, but I want to ask.
A long time ago.
You were in the hospital. Okay, all right.
Yeah, this was during a time. So I was in a hospital. I was born in a hospital, and I was actually in the hospital for 31 days before I was adopted. And if I wouldn't have been adopted, then I shortly after that, I think you can only stay in the hospital for a month, and then they send you to an orphanage. I just always had these dreams and these thoughts and these, I don't know, images of myself in a crib by a window by the sea. And I just imagined being alone for just a little baby, being alone for 31 days, just being all alone. And I keep thinking, I think it came over me too when I had my own children and held them close and thought, can you imagine a brand new baby just being left? Not obviously maybe held by nurses or volunteers or whatever, mm-hmm. but just not the same thing. And I just kept thinking there had to be someone else. And my poem ended up being like, I was hoping my mom, my birth mother, would probably have had some remorse or some feelings or something. I don't know her situation. I don't know if it was forced or if she was like, see you later. This is not what I want. You know, I don't know. But I, in my heart, it made me feel good to think that there was someone watching over me like angels. And so that kept me feeling connected and whole and not left or abandoned.
So for you, there was no anger?
No, I mean, there's sadness.
Sadness.
But there's not anger. I don't feel any anger. I just feel sadness if it wasn't something that she wanted.
Here's a question that I started asking people since the last time we were together. Mm-hmm. I asked the question, does it hurt you to write poetry in general?
Yeah. Yes. And especially this. Usually when I write, like when I wrote my Colors Collected book, I was excited and inspired and rejuvenated when I would write my poems. Some of them were heavier than others, but
yes.
This came from a different spot. So the poems in this book, even poems that aren't my story, that are another story of someone that I'm sharing in a different way, they are hard. And I cried a lot. I've never cried more with any book I've written. And there's some poems that I had to practice and practice reading them aloud because I would just cry. And I knew that when I was writing this book, I would literally cry. Because they're just real, they hurt. Yeah, they hurt.
How many poems did you choose from in terms of selecting for this particular book? What was the selection process like? How many poems did you choose from?
Honestly, I had 36 poems and I ended up, I think there's 69 or 70 poems in here. I should know that number, but I don't. I know my editor does, but I can't remember. No, I can't remember. But she had me double it. She wanted me to double the book. She wanted it to be a full book with a spine. She wanted it to be a full poetry book and not a small chapbook like we usually do in poetry. So that was an exciting challenge, and I had to dig really deep. And that's why I started writing more poems than just my own. And I started answering kind of those what if question poems. And so it was a nice escape because I got to write different stories, but they didn't hurt any less. The ones that brought me joy were the ones that were like my happy poems about my own growing up. Although those make me cry too, because I feel so thankful and grateful to my parents. And there's so many people who don't have a happy ending, and I feel like I got my happy ending. And so that then brings emotion. I would think the selection process was different for this book because I actually had to grow it and make it bigger. So we did end up pulling, I think, two or three poems that we just decided didn't really quite fit into any of the categories, or they didn't quite fit the mood that we were having, the flow. It's almost like a chapter book, like I said, like a novel. So you go from this section of this birth mother and all these different feelings. And my editor who placed them, she was the one who placed them in their orders. And I just love it because she starts with the more heavy, sad, and ends with that more hopeful. So there's a sense of sadness and heavy, and then hopeful, and then sadness and heavy, hopeful, and then sadness and heavy, hopeful, you know, at the end with each of the three sections. So we only had to remove, I think, three poems we removed, and the rest we kept.
All right. Please share some more of your work. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So this one is called They say it's on page 31. I know some people are out there with their books. Okay. They say, and this is in the section of the birth mother. Now with time gone by, they say, it was a gift that I set you free because I couldn't care for you. I was too young, because I was too something other than everything I was. I was in love with you, though it happened by chance. It doesn't expunge swollen emotions, 9 months longing to meet you, my aspirations and dreams to kiss your head, to cradle my pinky in your grasp, to hold you when you cry, to tell you I will never leave you, and somehow, some way, we would manage just fine. But they sent me away to a safe place, they say, safe from myself, because I was made to feel shame, to feel remorse for my actions by wrongly creating you. Suddenly, I was an abomination to be extinguished, or at the very least, hidden away from the damage I'd become, they say. That's a heavier one. And then if I go to the adoption family section, I'm trying to do one from each section throughout. This is on page 67, and I love this one. It's called Bundled Gift. And this is how I imagined, you know, the idea of like storks drop a baby. This was my idea of storks dropping a baby. Bundled gift delivered, as if by storks, as if a favor traded deep within a childhood forest. Enchanted story, fairy tale told, tale, after long awaiting, light glimmered, a new start. Rumpelstiltskin slept, his name whispered on repeat, repeat, as if a lullaby sung, as if a star wish born soared from the dark night of my womb to the bright measure of your heartbeats. Prancing reindeer gift, warm skin, tiny fingers reached as if petals stretched for the sun, as if you were always meant for me, bundled gift. And then this last poem for this little set, I guess I only chose three for this set, but I can always keep going. This is called Beauty in a Broken Heart, and this is on page 121 in the child section, the adopted child section. And this is my voice of, this is my message to the people out there. In fact, this is a big thread in this poetry book, is that you can be, I can be adopted and have the most loving parents and loving experience and still feel unsure sometimes, right? You still have those questions, like I mentioned before, and that's so natural. And it has nothing to do with the wonderful home I had, right? So it's just a way that I explained it. So it's called Beauty in a Broken Heart. You were wanted and picked out, I promise. Proving words alone cannot mend a broken heart. I know you love me, yet there's no need to internalize my loss. You had the power and saved me, only you can't take on her sacrifice or burden or mistake, we'll never know. But one thing I know, years of I love you was surely enough. Iris has bloomed along borders of a hole always there. Weeping willows shaded my angst for most years. And you should know how tall I still stand, even with that void notched in my side. Broken heart still beautiful because of you. So this is kind of like a little personal note to my parents that they made my life wonderful. And those willows and that border of irises, that was from my childhood home. That's a very personal poem for me.
I'd like you, let's follow the same process again. Please read one of those three again, and we'll talk about it in detail.
Okay. Which, let's see, do you want me to do
Rumpelstiltskin.
Okay. 67.
I
know.
Said it 18 times in a row. Rumpelstiltskin. You know what I'm saying?
That was the way. You got it, I know. Yeah. Rumpelstiltskin. Rumpelstiltskin. That was the poem. That was a fun one. That one brought me joy to write because it was like, that's my fantasy side, right? I'm a fantasy writer as well. And so that was my kind of little fantasy fairy side. Okay. Bundled gift. And you have to imagine, I'm imagining like a baby coming to the home of a family who's adopting, who's been waiting for a child. Bundle gift delivered as if by storks, as if a favor traded deep within a childhood forest, enchanted story, fairy tale told, tale after long awaiting, light glimmered, a new start. Rumpelstiltskin slept. His name whispered on repeat, 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 as if a lullaby sung, as if a star wish born soared from the dark night of my womb to the bright measure of your heartbeats. Prancing reindeer gift, warm skin, tiny fingers reached as if petals stretched for the sun, as if you were always meant for me, bundled gift. That's a fun one, isn't it?
Which line were you most proud of writing in that particular piece?
Let me think. This one I actually worked on a lot. Sometimes my poems flow and just become, and
yes.
I don't do a lot of changing because I'll try to revise and it's nope, this is it. This one I reworked a lot because it went in a lot of different directions. And I really wanted to get as many little moments of childhood fairy tale, like Rumpelstiltskin and prancing reindeers and just all those things. I think, honestly, my favorite is the very beginning where I do guess I love the one where it says, as if a star wish born soared from the dark night of my womb to the bright measure of your heartbeats. I love that. I love that line.
When you write, how does a poem know where to go? Do you lead? Or does it lead you?
That's a good question. I think both. A lot of times I will get struck by a memory or a moment, especially with this book, or a sense of joy, a sense of gratitude, a sense of sadness, whatever it might be. And I would just sit down and lines would just pour out. And in that situation, those poems wrote themselves. And then as I was nearing the end of this poem, my amazing editor, Tess, as I was looking to see, I was trying to keep track of, she really wanted to encourage me to do the three sections, right?
Yes.
So I wanted to make sure I had ample, without forcing it, obviously I didn't want to force any poetry. I wanted to have enough poems for each section. So it took a while. So I spent a year writing this book, taking the original one that I told you that was once called Gravitational Pull, that was 39 poems. I started there and then I grew it over, it took a year to grow. And I would just let myself feel things. And then because I was meditating on this idea or thinking about this book. And so I would, those memories and moments came. The other part that happened is I had some amazing conversations with other people, just some amazing people that I ran into. And it's so funny because the closer this book got to being completed, the more people I would meet that were adoption touched and sharing their stories with me that I didn't even know. And at one point, of course, the book was locked and done and I couldn't add or change anything. And I met more people with adoption stories. And so this is just, I love the idea that this is opening this conversation of adoption, yes, in a really loving way. That doesn't, you know, I wanted to not do the political side. I'm not talking pro-choice or pro-life with anyone. This is all about just this gift of adoption. And I just, those stories that I heard from other people were so, they were inspiring to me. So for me, those stories were like a challenge. So the stories I heard later, and as I was trying to make each of the sections kind of balance, those were the ones where I was challenging myself, and I was actually trying to write the poem, and I was stretching it and pulling it and knitting it together, pulling out my threads, trying again until it felt right. So those that were, I don't think it was any, they're any less meaningful, because it was like I wanted to make the story someone told me, and I had to weave it into a way that was more fictionalized, right? So that I didn't, you know, my publisher didn't want to have to do all the permissions from everyone. So I took all my stories with permission from them to switch and change and mold into a new story with the essence of their story they told me. And so those were challenges that I had to mold like clay, where my other poems that were just fell out of me onto the page practically wrote themselves. So I guess that was a long-winded answer to say both. I do
perfect.
Both ways.
Perfect. We're going to take a short break. But what I'd like you to do when we return, I'd like you to share with me the titles of five poems, just any five poems in the book. All right?
Okay. Sounds good.
We'll be right back.
All right.
Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with Selene Charles. The title of her new full-length collection is Three Hearts Stitched. Share with us the titles of five poems in the book, please.
Okay. It's hard to choose five when I have 70 poems. So,
just pick any five.
Okay. All right.
Any
here's
five.
My five. Maybe it's six. Okay, so I have, oh my gosh, so many. So My Greatest Mistake, My Prison, Forever Family, Thumbprint Faces, and then Have You Ever Thought About Finding Your Birth Parents? Those are some titles I have.
Thank you. My question is, when titling a poem, what should you consider?
A lot of times, a lot of my poems will be the first line. So when I first write a poem, the first line is always the title of my poem. And then as I work on the poems and revise or go back, sometimes I'll find, you know, as I'm reading it, I'll think, this is the title. This is the title. And I'll tease that out. Sometimes I have a title in my head and the poem writes from that. That's the poem. I think of the title and that's the poem I want to write. And then other times I write the poem and just for pure laziness or so that I can know what poem I'm talking about, I'll just give it the first line. And then usually I'll either keep it the first line or I'll often do the last line. That just tends to be what I do. But this one was a little bit different because as I was going through and writing so many poems about the same, almost 70 poems with the same topic, I had to get creative and I changed a lot of titles. And then that made me not know which one was which. So as I was like, oh, what did I call that? I'd have to go through and find the poem I was talking about because in my head it was something else, but I changed it. I don't know. That's my process.
All right. Thank you. Please share some of your poems from the book.
Okay. So this poem is from the birth mother section. It's on page 27. And this is a hard one. This is a heavy poem. And I This poem gets me. I think I'll be okay, but I usually get really emotional when I read this poem. I know of many women that this describes in a way. Like I said, I've taken stories that I fictionalized, but the essence of all this is reality. And so there's a lot of mothers that are having babies because they're in a compromised situation and they're not safe. And it just ends up being a sad situation, a sad part of their life. So anyway, I'll read the poem without going into too much more detail. It's called How Many Babies? This baby is the third child, fifth child, ninth child, unwanted pregnancy I've carried. Maybe I wanted them all secretly in my heart. Sometimes when I'm alone at night or in the early stretches of dawn while the world still sleeps, I hold my belly and dream of a different girl growing up in a different world where my mother protects me from the dangers of oppression and fear, pain and guilt, and the lowly acceptance of who I am, which in the eyes of everyone around me, I am nothing. I am unworthy. I am undeserving. I am an animal in a cage. And when they feed me, I eat. And so this new baby that I carry once again can simply slip away with the rising sun, for I am awake now. My dream is done. So that's the end of that one. And that one, look, give me chills. Like, I just get chills when I read that one. Another one. These are my heavy ones. I made my set three is heavy.
Okay.
So page 65 is in the adoption section. This I wrote for my sister. She's adopted, like I said, seven children, and she'd had a little baby girl that she adopted, and the mother changed her mind. I actually have a few poems about moms changing their mind, which is a fair thing to happen, but it hurts nonetheless. And this is for my sister. It's called Goodbye, Baby Girl. She wipes joy from baby girl's cheeks, her eyes close tight as puddles run, rivulets over mountaintops. Baby girl tries to sleep, unaware the tears aren't hers to shed. She's been here before, on these battlegrounds, armored in vulnerability. She's walked these floors at night, both hands on her lower back, burden in her belly, heart burning the scorn of loss. Nausea coats her throat, but she'll volunteer again and again, offering the crook of her arm for the unwanted she can't have. One last time, she bends over baby girl. Birth mother changed her mind. She whispers blessings, carries her tiny vessel onward to deliver. No need to look back. The moment forever marked in tear stains over mountaintops. Whew, I almost cried on that one. That's a hard one for me to read. Okay. And now another heavy one. Oh, my goodness. Page 141, this is in the the adopted child. And this one's called 141. Sorry, I went to the wrong page. This is called Rejection. Rejection is real, even when you're told you are chosen, you are wanted, you are loved, and still somehow there's a little snag at the bottom left side of your heart, a loose thread jostled by the slightest movement, barely a brush or a breeze, scratching gently as if not to harm, only a reminder in case you forget. And that's what I have for that section, although those are pretty short. I can keep going if you want.
Well, instead of my asking you to share one of those three again, can you think of a line in any one of those that as you crafted it, it seemed to be the most challenging to do, that one line?
You know, in the poem Rejection, the one I just read,
yes.
it was really hard for me to figure out how to show that it's real, even when you're wanted and loved, but that's okay. And so it was really hard for me, and I finally rested on the part that it's like a little teeny loose thread in your heart. So when I wrote the part, there's a little snag at the bottom left side of your heart, a loose thread, jostled by the slightest movement, just barely a brush or a breeze, scratching gently as if not to harm, only a reminder in case you forget. And I think it's because sometimes you live your life and you don't even think about it. Being adopted is just, I always knew I was adopted, so it wasn't a surprise or anything I had to learn about. But there's always just that little section of where you just wonder and you have questions. And so it's just, you'll go on your life and you'll go forever and not think about it. For example, when I hadn't thought about being adopted or having a birth mom or dad out there, and then I had my first baby and I'm in the hospital and I was just overwhelmed with emotion and I couldn't shake it. And so that's that snag that I think it's just always going to be there to remind you.
So with this book of poems, this collection, are you hoping to resonate with a broad range of readers, or are you targeting a specific audience? Because like you said earlier, maybe this is before we began, that your work is universal in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's about longing and sometimes not feeling as if you belong.
Yeah.
So it's universal in that regard. So what's your focus in terms of the audience for this book?
Yeah. At first, it seemed like it was a niche, like it was just poems about adoption. And I was really writing to those people, to birth mothers, who often we don't know who they are anymore. There's a lot of open adoptions now.
Mm-hmm.
So mothers can come forward. When I was adopted, it was all closed and locked down, so we don't know. Or people who are adopted have all different kinds. There's fostering to adopt. There's adoption at all different ages. There's positive adoption situations. There's negative adoption situations. There's just so many forms. And then adopting families going through all kinds of situations. And I thought, that's my niche. That's the direction I want to go. And then suddenly I got scared at the end thinking, wow, is this can only be enjoyed by those people or those readers. And then I felt like it wasn't that what couldn't be true because I, like you said, this book has so much more. And the
yes.
more people I was reading my poems to, the more open and the more people that my poems resonated with them. And the feedback I got back was that, wow, these are about like mothers can relate, women can relate, men can relate. I've had some great reviews by men, actually, and I have a couple poems about fathers, and I had one of my readers got a hold of me and thanked me for that poem about having that father's voice. I love that it can resonate with humans. All have stories, and we all want to belong. We all have a birth story, even if it's with our blood-related parents or biological parents or maybe it's step parents, maybe it's neighbors or grandparents that raised us. And so I think that these poems match with anyone, right? Because we're all adopted into this world. I mean, we get adopted by our friends, we get adopted by our friends'
yes.
family, all those things. So I think it is more universal now.
And you may have already answered this, but if you could advise your readers before they purchase the book, any advice? What would it be? And I guess I'm thinking is that adoption is bigger than adoption because, as you just said, you can be adopted by your friends. We adopt friends.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge universal concept in itself. I'm just wondering, what would you share with someone?
What I've been telling people is that the book is, if you're looking for a book that has a little bit of sorrow, you want to feel sometimes you just want to feel that sadness and sorrow and get those emotions out. Maybe you've had some childhood trauma. This might help you through that. But there's always the joy. There's always hope. There's pieces with joy and hope and so much gratitude. And so it's really a book where, and honestly, my editor came up with this. Tess Jones is amazing. She came up with my little, I don't know, blurb about the book. And she said, it's like this: be prepared to have your heart ripped open, mourn, and stitched back up again. Right. So I feel like if you are a reader who, if you like poetry, and even I've been told, because it's contemporary poetry and it's not heavy, it's not real heavy literary, like it's very, I feel like it's very easy reading. So a reader who, yeah, and I've been told a lot too, and that's actually my focus. I always want my poems to be enjoyed by everyone, by anyone. I don't want anyone to pick it up and go, oh, this is really confusing, I don't understand this. Or I want them to try to be able to figure things out, because there's lots of layers, but I want my poems to be enjoyed by anyone. And I think that if you're looking for, if you enjoy some poetry or this sort of reads, because of the way my editor put it together into the chapters and the sections, it reads like a story of their adoption stories, if you will. There are all these little adoption stories, these little moments of peeking into someone else's life, because we don't know who we're going to meet on the street or who we work with or who we're in line behind that has a story or that's going through feelings or emotions. Like I said, I had my baby in the hospital and I was all of a sudden overwhelmed with emotion. So I think this book is good for people who do like poetry, obviously. I think it's good for people who are adoption touched or not. And if you just like to read poems about the human heart, and that we all have stories.
Please share another set, if you don't mind.
I'd love to. Okay, I'm moving into my section of requested poems. I don't think I can get them all in, but I did have some requested poems, and so I want to read a few of those.
Yes.
This one was requested. It's called, it's in the beginning section of the birth mother. It's on page 29, and it's called I Am Not a Monster. And this is the last poem that I wrote to put in here. It's interesting. It always stands out. This was the last one. I wanted to make sure I added this voice for sure. I am not a monster. I don't want you right now, but I don't want you not to be. So please understand, down the road, when you wonder about your past, when you wonder about me, if you do wonder about me, I am not a monster. I am not a monster. I am not a monster. I just couldn't be the person you needed me to be. That one is just a poem about sometimes we just don't know why someone decides to give up a child. And sometimes it just might be that they just can't do it right now. And that's okay. That's okay. And they aren't a monster for that, because they went ahead and passed that on to someone who, like all these adopting families, are just so grateful, right? So grateful. That was what that poem was about. And then I love this next poem. This next poem was another request, and it's on page 113. And this one is about my family. It's called The Mix of Us. So this one's a personal one for me. The Mix of Us. Her ultimate sacrifice became our miracle. And I don't quite have all the words to adequately say how I feel, to show you my true gratitude. I wonder, does my sister, fully yours, ponder in her thoughts about appreciation and pride, about relaying to you her thankfulness for life? I don't know if her burden is as heavy, though not to compare. That thread you stitched between us neatly, respected the only difference in our eyes. Thankfully, you never cared from where I came. You only threw me into the mix of us, our great togetherness from her ultimate gift. And then another request is, oh, I love this one too. It's back to page, I don't know why I did that order, page 37. It's back in the birth mother section. And this was a request from someone. I don't want to say their names in case they don't want me to. My greatest achievement. He is the single greatest achievement of my life. The baby boy I carried for you the baby boy I loved first for you. At every moment, he was always meant to be yours. And then another one that was requested is page 133. And I don't know, this one looks better on the page than reading it aloud, but I'll do my best. It's called Set Free. I love you. I love you to the mother who raised me. I love you to the father who called me his own. I love you to the mother and father who left me, shared me, chose a new path for me. I love you even if you didn't love me or the world oppressed you with their rules at the time. I love you because even in joyful delight or unrighteous sorrow, I was set free. And that was my little set for that.
Jelaine.
Yes.
What do you think that your poetry, in this book and or in general, or your writing in general, what do you think it conveys about the human condition?
Even all my poems, even like poems about the forest or nature, which I'm really inspired by nature, there's always a sense of life. There's always a lifeline. There's always a thread pulsing. There's always a heartbeat pulsing. I just feel like even in the saddest moments, or if I'm writing about a beautiful tree or the sun shining through the window pane or the trauma in the world right now, like
yes.
Horrible trauma.
So much.
There's just so much going on. And I really feel like I just always want to make my poems almost alive a little bit. Like I just feel like for me, poetry and my work and my writing, even my fiction writing, if there's a thread or a pulse or something that draws you through from beginning, middle, end, there's a story there. There's a heartbeat there. There's emotions and feelings and growth there. And I always, even in my heavy heart poems, try to have a little bit of hope, always a little bit of light at the end.
So with this particular book, what did you learn about yourself?
I learned that, first of all, there's so many more stories than just mine, which I think I already knew that. But when I first set out to write this book, I was really trying to write my story. And then I realized there were so many voices I wanted to include with my voice. It couldn't just be me. And so I guess what I've learned is with all my stories, I want it to be, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm thinking about art. When you see a piece of art, or the artist might have thought one thing when they were painting or creating or writing or playing a musical piece, but then the reader or the listener or the observer picks up something completely new or different. I love that. I love when people relate to what you want, that what you were relating to, because then you've got that kind of connection. Yes, that's exactly what I was. That's what I meant. But then I also love that kind of inspiring, open, just that surprise of when something new, like I've had people tell me that my pieces have touched them in a way that I had never intended. And that's the kind of writing I want to always continue to do. That's the purpose for this book. Like I said, it's about adoption, but I've learned that this is about much more than that. And I think it can touch people in many more ways than I can even begin to think.
You know, you've almost reached the end of this poetic journey, but I'm wondering, do you have one more set in you that you can share with us?
I can do it. I've got one more set ready to go. Okay. So I decided to end with, let's see. Okay, so I'll do this one. Page 21. This is Back to Birth Mother. This one I almost didn't read in case my family's listening, but I'm doing it anyway. So I wrote this poem. It's called My Greatest Mistake. And it was one of those poems that I wrote imagining what was that night when I was conceived? What was that? Were my parents dating? Was it a one night stand? Was it a, I don't know, what was it? Hoping it wasn't anything, you know, negative or bad. I was going on the happy side. And I came up with this image in my mind, and this is what came of it. So I made it up. My greatest mistake. This is me answering my what if question, those adoption what if questions. My greatest mistake. My error in judgment wasn't that night, because I chose that November moment between the sand-buried cattails and picket fence. I rolled out the patchwork quilt from Gran, though she'd have turned in her grave had she seen the tub of fries and cans of beer set out between us. Surely she'd have blushed had she heard the smack of my lips on his, the rip of my skirt zipper not quite swallowed up by the swells of the gulf behind us. Music played from his car radio, but I can't remember the song because his breath was in my ear, along with the waves and kisses, but his hands were on my heart. But his hands on my heart stilled me, and I wanted him. He left after that. I replayed the moment over and over in my head, though I told no one, until I discovered his Valentine tucked deeply away in my soul. I stood on the sand that day, winter blowing my hair, but there was no sound. Maybe my greatest mistake was saying nothing on that shore. I was too quiet and too young and too something far less daring than the pounding waves. I just wasn't ready when you were. I needed to grow. At least that's what I tell myself every November when I lay out Gran's patchwork quilt across the white sands and cut pink paper hearts to hide under shells and bury along the shore behind the cattails waving hello. Maybe you'll find one. Maybe my littered heartstrings will be the crumbs we need to reunite, because I'm braver than I was back then, more courageous than the seagull swiping french fries from my hand and wiping and the wind wiping the beach clean. My greatest mistake wasn't that night. And then I have another one. This one is very special to me. I wrote it for my mom, and this is one that I used to cry because it just means so much. It's on page 111, 111, three number ones for my mom. Okay. Stubborn and strong. It's called Stubborn and Strong. My mother smiled, or rather smirked, to the world at one time, telling her she would never hold her desire. And instead, my mother, stubborn and strong, said, I don't care, and did it anyway. And she did anyway. She picked me up and held me close while my father decided I looked like him. And I did. Then my sister came most naturally, and for my mother, stubborn and strong, everything fit in the world because she smiled and made it so. And then, you know what I did on my list? I have the last poem I was going to read is one I already read. So I don't know. Do you have a section you want me to choose from, or?
Let's see.
Let's end with
on a ray of hope.
Okay.
Ray of hope. I'd love that.
How about this one? It's short. Do you want a short one?
Yes.
Oh, I should read this. This is awesome. Okay, I'll read this one. This one's personal again. This is my family. This is totally my family. She's Portuguese and I'm adopted. This is what this is called, because my sister was born in the Azores. She's Portuguese and I'm adopted, I recited at a young age, amidst joyful faces and hidden chuckles. It was the fortitude of my childhood, a masterpiece in the making, painted in broad strokes for permanence, blue skies and my daddy fixing anything broken, even bones, and then my heart. Mama worked as a nurse and picked berries for canning, daddy fixing, mama mixing. Summers were colored with "you're fine" or "time for bed" and always "I love you" with strawberry jam. Winter wonderland fell during the night, but only footprints in the backyard or on mountaintops, bundled up and cocoa from the thermos. This was my life, never distinguished, borders dividing. "You look like your dad," they'd say, heritage woven thick. And that, I have so many more I could read, but boy, I love, the more I read my poems for people, the more I just, I really love this book. This is the most personal, intimate thing I've written, and it's just
sitting here thinking that maybe you'll come back for part two later in the year.
Ooh. I would love that. I'd be happy.
And we can structure the program any way that you'd like to do it. Other writers with similar stories. However, we can brainstorm something. How's that sound?
Yeah, that'd be a great idea. Maybe a little panel or other,
yeah.
Other
yes.
authors that are writing about.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I would love to be a part of that.
and because we're moving to YouTube, it'll take on a different kind of onus habit where people can see everyone. So.
Oh, I would love
let's,
that.
Let's
yeah.
keep talking.
I would love to do that. I love to talk. I'm a talker.
That's why you've always been my favorite. So,
thank you.
So, where can Three Hearts Stitched be purchased? Where can we find the book?
Yeah, it's on any online retailer. So Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Target, BookBub, any place that you want to go online. And it's in print and it's also in an ebook. So any of those online places that you want to go. And if you do buy this book, I would love a review. I have to ask for a review. I used to never do that, but honestly, authors need reviews. That's how we get our books in front of eyes. Amazon and even Barnes & Noble, they all have an algorithm. And so if you don't have enough reviews, then your book just gets swallowed up. So it'd be great. Thank you in advance for anyone who's out there wanting to do that.
So please review this book.
Yeah.
So like, what's next for you creatively? Where do you go from here?
I am so busy. Back to my fiction side. I'm in the process of writing two fiction books right now. And I also have another novella that I finished that will come out next October. And then for poetry, as soon as I'm marketing this one and trying to ride this one out and get people excited about buying it. And then I have another little poetry project that I'm jumping into feet first because that's what I do. And I'm hoping that my new one, I won't give too much away, but it'll have a little bit of a Seattle theme.
All right. I'd like to thank you for joining me. Again, this is the very last episode of Quintessential Listening Poetry Online Radio. We're moving into Quintessential Listening Poetry Online Radio at YouTube. So this
Yay!
Is a very monumental moment. And I
it
want to
is.
Thank you.
I got to kick you out and then into the new.
Into the new.
Then I'm definitely coming back.
You are welcome back anytime. I wish you nothing but the best. I think what you're doing is phenomenal. You're sharing about a topic that needs to be talked about more and more, including the men's voices as well. That's so integral to this. To the whole equation, that's half the equation in many situations,
yeah.
in
exactly.
all situations for the most part.
Yeah. It's often that you just don't hear. I could read my father poem if you want. It's really short.
I'd love to.
Do we have time?
Let's not leave our dad. All right.
I know. We got to leave out the dad. Okay. It's called Forgotten Father. We don't want to leave him out. It's called Forgotten Father. And it goes like this. Forgotten father snagged between the pages, memories of mother and child, while words trickle like the creek behind grandma's house, buttercups like periods and exclamation points. The story ends there. The end has never had a chance to begin. Too many unknowns, the wonderings of what if he never knew a baby to be? What if shadows were all he left behind? What if the pain was too great for him or her or them to stay? What if he only donated this piece of himself for a cause, one greater than himself? What if he wanted the baby but had no voice or choice? What if I tug on this snag? What if I write a new page? So that was just the idea that it's just real short and just all those different like possibilities of art. We so often just go right to the mom.
Yes.
Because they're the ones carrying the baby and we forget about the dad side. And so I don't have enough of the father voice in my book, but I do have a couple. There's a couple other ones and there's a longer poem I won't read because it's really long, but I talk about mothers are mothers and fathers are mothers and the community are mothers and our earth is a mother. And that's, I have that that, you know, perspective in here as well.
Okay. You might as well read that one. That's an anthem.
Okay. I will do it.
You might as well read it.
Okay. Here I go. I'm doing it. It is, I got to find it. Cause again, I guess I could look at my table of contents. I tried to just go quickly. Okay, it is. Oh my goodness. Where is this poem? Oh my goodness. I will find it. It is here. Here, ask me a question and then I'll, here it is.
Okay.
It's called Mothers Are. Oh my goodness, panic.
Okay.
Mothers are. Mothers are women who birth their young. They are women who raise babes born from other wombs. They are women who give their babies away to another mother's arms, either by choice or persuasion. Mothers make difficult decisions no one can judge. Mothers are men who decide to stay. With feet like roots, they raise their own babes. Mothers are men who care for their young, who tend to the needs of children who might not be their own, but they stay. They stay. Mothers are community who grow gardens. They seek to plant and feed, to sow seeds of culture and guidance that may or may not come from home. Mothers are community because they spend the most time with our young. The world is filled with mothers who need mothering themselves, mothering from women and men and community, mothering from people regardless of blood, people regardless of baggage or intention, people regardless of mood or expectation or reciprocation. Mothering comes from the sky, independent of storms and weather, impartial of forest or land, both undiscovered and trampled through. Mothering comes from the earth's bountiful belly, birthing a world in need of mothering. Mothers are the earth. And there you go.
Perfect. Perfect poem to end on.
Thank you.
Rosalind, take care. I'll see you in the spring, hopefully. Maybe
that
before.
That sounds wonderful. I'm so excited about your YouTube and have going more like visual. So I'm so excited. Thank you for allowing me to be your final show heading into your new look. I mean, your show is doing amazing right now.
Do you know that there's someone online that might have a question for you? I'm going to bring this person on.
Sure. Oh, my goodness.
We're going to be here all. There are more people. Okay, let's see. Okay. We'll be here all night long. All right, let's see. Cool. Area code 509. The first three numbers are 509. You're on the air with Selene. Welcome. Good evening. Hello.
Hi, this is Dan.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
I just wanted to let you know that I was listening.
Oh,
and it's been an absolutely delightful hour and 15 minutes.
Thank you. And you were, 15 minutes. Dan is the one, he's my reader. We met at, well, I think we met, I don't know how we met, but I've met him again at a writing conference, and he followed my books and my poems, and he's the one that read and made the beautiful comments about the man's voice, or the father's voice. So thank you, Dan.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't really have a question. I just wanted to let you know that I was listening and I was loving it.
Thank you. That means a lot. Thank you for your support and your cheers. And I just really appreciate that.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much for calling in.
Bye-bye.
You betcha.
Right.
That was nice.
Well, it is nice. It's very nice. It's very nice. The other person who, they're gone now. We'd better hang up now.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And thank you for anyone else who tried to call and didn't get through.
Wait a minute. This person is back. Hold on. Let's see. Area code 425.
Okay.
You're on the air with Solange Charles. Good evening. Hello.
And thank you for anyone else who tried to call and didn't get through.
Hello.
Wait a minute. This person is back.
Hello.
Yes. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Hello. Area code 425. The first three numbers are 445. You're on the air.
Hi. I had a question. You were asking a lot about the fathers.
Yes.
Are you there?
Yes.
And I was wondering if the host himself had to give up a child or had been adopted, because he's very interested in the father's perspective.
Yes. So what was the question? Are we talking about the host or the poet?
You'd like to hear from me?
Yes.
You'd like to hear my perspective on fathers?
Yes.
There's an echo in the background, so I can barely make out what you're saying.
Yes. Well, I will turn down the background because I was listening at the same time, and the timing's a little off.
So share that again.
Hi, Selene. I love your poetry, and I've loved both your books, and so good job. And I've been listening to the show and was just wondering what the host thought about the father's perspective, because he had quite a few questions about it.
Thank you. Oh, thank you for listening. So I guess that's you, Michael.
I still didn't understand what she said.
I'm wondering what your, since you're a man, what's your, do you have a perspective on adoption or any,
oh,
from
I
what I was reading?
Think. Yep. Okay. I think that children need love.
Yeah.
Whether adopted, biological, we all need people to care about us and want us to be in this world.
Yeah.
And my hope and goal is that people find good people. I don't know, it just touches my heart, so that I want people to feel loved and supported and encouraged to be themselves, so they can grow up strong as young men, women, children. That's what I want. That's what I crave. That's all.
Yeah.
And so when you talked about the fathers, it just made me think, we don't talk about them enough, that they're part of it too. They're a major part of it.
Yeah.
And their stories need to be told.
Yeah. Yeah.
The good,
definitely,
bad, and indifferent of that, of what happens when we bring people into the world. I'm not sure whether that answers your question or not, but that's just how I want to phrase it for right now.
I love it. I think that answers the question. Does that help you?
All right.
Yeah. Yes. And plus, the adoptive father as well, I'm sure, is just huge in the equation as well.
Yeah.
Yes. Very much.
Thanks for calling.
Powerful topic. All right, we better go.
Right. That was my
Thank
point
you
to
for
open,
me.
Up,
All
open
right.
up that conversation. That's what we've
All
done,
right.
and I like that. Thank you so much, Michael.
Again, as you see, here's somebody else.
I'm never going to get out of here.
After this person, we offer you. Area code 940, the first three numbers are 757. You're on the air with Soleil. Welcome. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
I'm sure that Selene recognizes the voice.
I
just want to know how you managed.
I recognize your voice.
I want to know how you managed to hold it together and not cry through some of that. I know you said you got close.
I had to practice. I choked up a couple of times. This is my sister, everyone, and there's several songs for her.
Sister, what's your first name, sister? I feel like I know you. What's your first name?
My first name is Tanya.
Hello, Tanya. Welcome to the program.
Hello. I was crying listening, so I don't know how you didn't cry reading it.
I had to, Tanya, I had to practice. I had to say, it took me several times, and honestly, writing a lot of those, I literally cried. And I'm sure you've probably picked out the ones that you know from your gut or you.
Oh. So in all honesty, sitting here, my husband and I, we pass the book back and forth because one of us will read something and we'll read it out loud and we'll both end up in tears because we're like, oh, we know which story that is. but there's been just as many joyous times too. But yeah, it's hard to read it because there's a lot of that that's my life on those pages and I love it. And I'm so proud of my sister for what she's done and what she's put out there for the world. It's absolutely amazing. And I know that y'all are running out of time, but if at all possible, I just want to hear you read Love.
I could read Love. If there's 8 minutes and we're getting cut off.
No, go ahead. We're fine. We'll end with Love. All right.
Tanya, thank you. Okay, we'll end with Love and then we're done, right?
Yes, then we're done.
I will read Love. And Tanya, thank you so much. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Okay,
I'm going to hang up. Love
okay,
you, too.
I love you.
I love you,
all
too.
Right, okay, here we go. Do you want me to read Love? Is there time?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Love. There are no words to describe my full heart pumping like fire, raging like the creek from my childhood where Dad took us camping. The bluest lake you've ever seen, as perfect as heaven, I imagine. Mom sectioned the makings for s'mores in Tupperware containers, enough for each night. Sunshine rained like miracles that summer I learned to water ski. I don't know how he did it, but Dad turned my terror upside down. I learned to fly, an unbeliever, until his miraculous faith pulled me up from the water. Then he winked at me, and that was that. My heart was full. That moment, that wink, my pride burst its seams, though today my heart breached once more, surpassing its borders, spilling over, pulling me above the surface, water's edge like stained glass, when slowly, like the creek emptied mountain snow in my childhood lake, you slid into my arms and heaven winked, I swear it. I wrote that about having my own children after that memories of all my life and then bringing life forth. So there you go. Thank you, Michael. And thanks for going extra.
That's okay. That's okay. This is a good one. All right, everyone. As I share with you every time we're together, let poetry ring somewhere throughout the land. Nice
land. I love that. Thank you. Good night.
Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio, is available on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. You can also check out the website at qlpor.com.